Hello, and welcome to the Women's Hour. I'm Kelly Pyle, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. Today's show features articles from the February 11th issue of People Magazine and the January edition of Women's Health. A few of the articles I will share today include SNL's Golden Anniversary, Confessions of a Pop Star Mom, and Light Therapy. SNL's Golden Anniversary, 50 years of laughs and very late nights. Six comedy legends come together to discuss five decades of hilarious TV history. What could go wrong? By Jason Sheeler. Photographs by Mary Ellen Matthews. This is a People exclusive. Wrangling six legendary comics from the most legendary comedy show in television history is not easy. But once Leslie Jones, Kate McKinnon, Seth Meyers, Molly Shannon, Kenan Thompson, and Bowen Yang finish their photo shoot and impromptu dance party, they assemble, and two topics quickly emerge. Lorne Michaels, the creator and executive producer of Saturday Night Live, Michaels' mantra, "The show doesn't go on because it's ready, it goes on because it's 11:30, is remembered. And, well, love. We all did this because it's the greatest job in television, Shannon says. Underneath it all is love. SNL premiered on NBC in October 1975 and was boundary-breaking and FCC censor-skirting from the start. It also, without question, became a star factory, launching the careers of Bill Murray, Eddie Murphy, Adam Sandler, Tina Fey, Kristen Wiig, and of course, the six people sitting down with people. Now the show is turning 50, and celebrations and retrospectives are underway. Doc's SNL 50 Beyond Saturday Night and NBC's Ladies and Gentlemen 50 Years of SNL Music are now streaming on Peacock, a live music event takes over Radio City Music Hall on February 14th, streaming live on Peacock, and SNL's three-hour anniversary special will be live from Studio 8H on February 16th on NBC and Peacock. As the six begin chatting, the love is palpable, the laughs are well-earned, and the up-all-night swing hard, fail big pressure of sketch comedy before a live studio audience and millions of screens is recognized as only a very rare group of people can. Here, they reflect on their journeys to 30 Rock and the moments, players, and characters that paved the way. You all began, like many, as SNL fans. What cast members first inspired you? Bowen Yang. My first exposure to the show was Molly and Will Ferrell and Chris Kattan. And then graduating college, it was Kate and Leslie, Seth, and then Kenan being this perfect constant thing. It's amazing to have the continuum in this tableau. I'm using so many obnoxious words. Kenan Thompson, continuum in this tableau. Well said. Leslie Jones, Gilda Radner as Rosanna Dana, Chevy Chase falling down the stairs, Garrett Morris, yeah, I'm old. Kate McKinnon, I started watching when I was 12. Watching Molly's character taught me what I wanted to do, which was to be this full, wacky, amazing, joyful, odd man out. Molly Shannon. Oh my God, that's so sweet. Auditions for the show are famously intimidating and quiet. What do you remember from yours? Thompson. I remember being kind of enamored by 30 Rock at first. It's a big building outside, small studio inside. Seth Meyers. I would have told you nobody laughs at auditions because nobody laughed at mine, but I was there for Leslie's. Jones. I was cocky as F. I walked in there. I was like, y'all in the back, move to the front. I don't perform like that. And then when I was finished, I was like, my name is Leslie Jones. Peace. Shannon. I spent all my waitressing money making a 5-minute VHS tape. I hired an editor and a guy to shoot it in my little dumpy apartment. I was on a payphone when they said, sorry, they passed on your tape. Then I picked myself back up and worked really hard on my characters. They came back around 5 years later and asked for a tape again. I was like, you have to come see my live show. Yang. At one of my auditions, I was in a silver metallic onesie and Kate was there. She gave me a hug and was like, you should be so proud of this audition, no matter what happens. Once you get onto the show, is that a whole new level of pressure? McKinnon, I came on at the end of the 37th season. I remember being like, oh my God, I could so spectacularly tank this at any moment. It's just like the only thing you ever wanted. And then you have to do it. And are you going to survive? Myers, the day you get hired, you're like, I can't believe I got hired. And the next day, you start worrying you're getting fired. Let's talk about hosts. Who came in surprisingly prepared? Thompson, Melissa McCarthy came in with a lot of ideas. And she was just like, I just want to throw this out there real quick. And they were all hilarious. Shannon, I felt that way with Jim Carrey. I was like, God, he just elevates every sketch. And then Jennifer Aniston, just very laid back. I remember being like, ooh, that's so cool. She had a big wedding ring on, and she was just easygoing, professional. She was so fun. Yang, that Fight Club sketch you guys did, with all the women beating the S out of each other, was so good. Jones, Tom Hanks, so good. Thompson, yeah, he was amazing. It is awesome to watch people continue to want to try to find things all the way up to the live show. He's one of the greatest human beings walking. So the host comes in Monday night. You write all day and night Tuesday. Then Wednesday is a big table read to see what will make the show. Jones, we used to call it Ash Wednesday. Myers, because everything burns. It's so oppressive. But even though it's not joyful per se, the table read is the most unique experience as far as being a part of SNL. Because that's where, up close, you get to see the funniest people you've ever seen fail, sometimes brilliantly. It's watching people you love take big swings and having it not work. Shannon, Will Ferrell and I had an agreement where if we bombed, we would have to embrace it. We treated it like the most glorious moment. Of course, sometimes you're laughing at yourselves on stage, Fans do love it when you break. Jones, it's funny as hell. Yang, it's a live show. When things go wrong, it's an error in stimulus. You laugh because something is not landing normally. Jones, or something is landing. Myers, but also sometimes we get to witness something the audience doesn't. I guess it was the Betty White show. In Molly, you did Sally O'Malley. You were pulling your pants up, and I was at the Weekend Update desk. The audacity and the joy. I was so lucky to have that vantage point. That was one of my favorite moments. Thompson. Molly, you eat it up every single time. And my favorite is when you say stretch, because it's like the kick is intense. You're having such a good time doing the dance of your gift. Myers, I turned 50 last year, and 15 different SNL people texted me that it was time to kick and stretch. Shannon, the character is based on my dad. This is not funny at all, but my dad was very badly injured in an automobile accident, and he had to learn to walk again. He would walk with a brace, and I grew up with him limping. So that's me imitating my dad. Sally's like, I can't, but then she fools people. She's got power. She can F you up. What role did the live studio audience play on Saturday night? Yang, I'm being so brainy about this, but I've always subscribed to this thing that Lorne says, which is, the audience is never wrong. If your sketch bombs, even though it killed on Tuesday, it doesn't matter. Thompson, the audience, that relationship between them and us is invaluable. It has to be connected for the show to be great. McKinnon, I always did better at dress rehearsal than on air. Having the camera, I always was cognizant of, there's a lot of people watching who are not in this room right now. But dress was more, it's just for us. Jones, you were always killing it. Let's go backstage at 11:29. Any pre-show rituals? Shannon, I would get down on my knees and pray, and I would have half a bite of a pretzel in case I got hungry. I would see Chris Farley in his dressing room. He was a practicing Catholic, and he would get down and pray. Jones, I listened for Keenan. When Keenan sings that opening song to warm up the audience, it's like, it's showtime. Turn it on. Lorne has told cast members that it takes 3 to 4 years to get comfortable on the show. Yang, I think it takes 3 to 4 years to get over the fear of getting fired, but I'm still a wreck every Saturday. Thompson, comfortable is subjective because we're always presenting something new. We never really have a relaxed moment until after it's done. SNL has never shied away from political figures, and Kate, you played a long list of them. How was it to tread the line between politics and comedy? McKinnon, I think the most fascinating thing about doing a political impression is really thinking about the inner life of these people who have such a profound effect on all of our lives. I find that a helpful exercise personally, just to make sense of what's going on. Myers, it still has to play. Lorne's never going to put something on that's just making a point. Ultimately, comedy has to be the first order of business. But SNL also has a beautiful history of helping us all cope with devastating news in real time. McKinnon, that's where Lorne's heart shines through the most. Yes, the show is funny. Yes, it's satirical. It's occasionally sardonic. But at the heart of it, there's an underlying goodness and a desire to reach and to comfort people. Those are my favorite parts. Thompson, I'm in my 22nd season, but I'm echoing what everyone else said. We love it. We respect it. It's a one-of-a-kind place. I think it's the people in front and behind the camera. So when they call me, am I not supposed to oblige the greatest job in the world? Jones, Tina Fey said that if Kenan ever walks out of 30 Rock, the whole building's going to collapse. 10 hilarious moments. The Blues Brothers. In 1976, blues fans Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi dressed in fedoras and Wayfarers and debuted the sketch that began as a pet project and spawned a number one album and film. Roseanne Rosanna Dana. Gilda Radner's iconic character, the Weekend Update reporter with the geometric wig, first grossed out Jane Curtin in 1977. Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood. Starting in 1981, Eddie Murphy spoofed Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood in sketches where he contended with the police and eviction notices. Wayne's World. Wayne, Mike Myers, Garth, Dana Carvey, and their public access TV show filmed from Wayne's basement arrived in 1989 and led to two films and a bevy of catchphrases. The Hanukkah Song. On Weekend Update in 1994, Adam Sandler played his original holiday tune, celebrating the season and listing his favorite Jewish stars for the first time. The Spartans. Wannabe cheerleaders Craig, Will Ferrell, and Ariana, Sherry O'Terry, wiggled their spirit fingers in 1995. Delicious Dish. In 1998, Pete Schwede, played by host Alec Baldwin, joined Anna Gasteyer and Molly Shannon for a racy holiday edition of the recurring sketch and NPR spoof. D in a Box. In 2006, Lorne Michaels asked Andy Samberg for a holiday musical sketch. The result was a gift that keeps on giving, a 90s era R&B duo with Justin Timberlake singing about, well, you know. The Californians. The soap opera sketch with Kristen Wiig, Fred Armisen, and Bill Hader in 2013 lampooned incoherent valley accents and labyrinth freeway directions in L.A. Hot Ones with Beyoncé. Maya Rudolph has played Beyoncé more than 10 times. But when she tested her spice limits in 2021, a new level of spoof was unleashed. This has been SNL's golden anniversary, 50 years of laughs and very late nights, a People Magazine exclusive. Meghan Trainor, Confessions of a Pop Star Mom. The singer-songwriter looks back on a decade in the spotlight and how motherhood and TikTok changed her life. By Jeff Nelson, photographs by Diana Konigsberg. This is from People Magazine. Meghan Trainor sits down to begin her interview when she hears clattering from across her home. House full of toddlers, she says with an apologetic shrug. When you have kids, it's just going to be loud for a little bit, but also the most joy ever, and pure chaos. After 10 plus years of pop stardom, Trainer 31 has come to embrace the chaos, which today is of the cute kind. After posing for family portraits at their people shoot, Trainer's son Riley 4 and Barry, 19 months, are excitedly playing with toy cars with her husband, Spy Kids actor Daryl Sabara, 32. Between her family and her still flourishing career, Trainer has built the life she always envisioned for herself. But there were bumps along the way. After she enjoyed overnight fame in 2014, with her body positive anthem, All About That Bass, the singer-songwriter's dreams were nearly derailed by self-doubt, vocal cord complications, and mental health issues. But a TikTok comeback and leaning into motherhood have set Trainer up for her most successful stage yet. When I became a mom, my career had a whole new life, she says. Indeed, last fall, Trainer wrapped her biggest tour in years, which included a sold-out show at Madison Square Garden. She just launched a Cloud Skin makeup collab with e.l.f. Cosmetics, and in March, she'll celebrate the 10th anniversary of her debut album, Title, with a re-release featuring 8 additional tracks. I had a whole reboot, and it's because my kids made me want to be the best version of me, Trainer says. I'm not peaking. I've just begun. As Trainer's career was taking off in 2014, she was told that pop stars have an expiration date. Once they got pregnant, they were like, "You're done," the Nantucket, Massachusetts native recalls. I was told at 20 by an older gentleman in industry, "Well, she's a mom, so nobody really cares." I was like, ouch. Following the success of Title, which included bass and hits like Lips Are Movin' and the John Legend duet Like I'm Gonna Lose You, Trainer's star was on the rise, and she was motivated to maintain that momentum. But she was disappointed when her sophomore album didn't perform as well on the charts. I thought, okay, well, the charts are representing my music, so I must just be bad at songwriting right now, Trainer recalls. I felt like I was a failure because it wasn't number one. It's sad that all that pressure is on you. Over time, Trainer was diagnosed with panic disorder, and the depression and panic attacks she suffered were exacerbated when her career was delayed by surgeries to treat vocal cord hemorrhaging that could have stolen her voice and livelihood. Trainer found relief when she began therapy and started taking antidepressants, which continue to help her manage her mental health. She also found solace in her relationship with Sabara, whom she married in 2018. "He is my rock," Trainer says. "We just communicate so well. He is my therapist and my best friend and my everything." Trainer's perspective changed when she became a mom. Priorities shifted. It's like, what charts? My kids love this, she says. At night, when we're doing bath time, I'm like, want to hear mommy's new song? Getting to talk to my older son now, I'll ask, what does mommy do? He's like, she's a pop star. Like, yeah, mommy's cool. Motherhood gave Trainer a creative reset, and so did TikTok. She found a new fan base on the app when she began posting videos with influencer Chris Olsen, and she scored her biggest hit in years when her single Made You Look went viral, with a choreographed dance and all, in 2022. Trainor had similar success last year when the cast of Netflix's The Perfect Couple danced to her song Criminals in the opening credit, sparking another online trend. I got a lot of comments like, I didn't know you were still doing it. I've been here, but thank you for joining. Trainor performed hits new and old when she promoted her latest album, Timeless, on tour last year with her kids in tow. I'd be fully glammed up, picking boogies, putting diapers on, putting them in their pajamas before a show. My glitter would be leaking on them. I would peel eyelashes off them all the time, but they loved it, she says. Nobody misses it more than Riley. Every day he's like, can we go back on tour? As the Grammy winner prepares to celebrate her roots with the 10th anniversary re-release of Tidal on March 28th, she's facing the future with renewed passion. Where I am right now is far beyond anything I could have ever dreamed of, Trainor says. I always wanted a family, check. Now I need some daughters. But I never thought I could be a pop star because I didn't believe in myself. Now 19-year-old Megan, putting out All About That Bass, is stoked. She's so proud, like, I didn't know you could do that. It took 10 years to become brave, but I'm finally thriving. This has been Megan Trainor, Confessions of a Pop Star Mom, from People. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer broadcaster, Kelly Pyle, and this is the Women's Hour. Reese Witherspoon and Will Ferrell, double talk, their funny friendship. The co-stars of the new rom-com, You're Cordially Invited, riff on their first meeting, wedding mischief, and costume rewears. By Esher Walcott and Eric Anderson, from People magazine. Reese Witherspoon and Will Ferrell have each starred in some of the most iconic comedies of the past few decades, including Election and Legally Blonde for Her, and Elf and Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy for him. So it's no surprise that when they sit down together, the jokes fly. After Ferrell, 57, inquires about a cameo in the next Legally Blonde project, Witherspoon, 48, offers him a supporting role. The part of the Chihuahua bruiser, she quips. The Chihuahua has passed, so I need a new support animal. Ahead of that potential pairing, Witherspoon, who shares daughter Ava, 25, and son Deacon, 21, with ex Ryan Felipe, and son Tennessee, 12, with ex Jim Toth, and Ferrell, dad to sons Magnus, 20, Matthias, 18, and Axel, 15, with wife Viveka Paulin, play rivals planning conflicting weddings in You're Cordially Invited on Prime Video January 30th. People RSVP'd yes to a chat with the two stars. You worked together for the first time on Saturday Night Live when Reese hosted in 2001. What do you remember about the episode? Reese Witherspoon. We did a sketch where I played the Little Mermaid. Will Ferrell. Was it the first show back? Witherspoon. It was the first show back after 9/11. I sang this song, and you were this prince I saw on shore, and you were like, wow, she's cute. Then I was like, hey, but one other thing, I have fish genitals. What were your first impressions of each other? Witherspoon, you were a really good singer. You were the big attraction of the show. Everybody wanted to do a skit with you. Farrell, I thought Reese was really talented. I mean, that's a hard show to do, but you hid your fear really well. Witherspoon, it was a scary time for everybody. What took you so long to work together again? Farrell, I don't know. You tell me. I sent you numerous emails. I think I had your Hotmail account. Witherspoon, earthlink.net, but I got rid of that. Farrell, so there are tons of emails in an old Earthlink account saying, hey Reese, what's up? I don't know if you got my last email. Things go off the rails at the weddings in your new movie. What are some real life mishaps you've witnessed? Witherspoon, my friend and I sort of took over a wedding in Hawaii. We were just guests. Farrell, you commandeered the dance floor? Witherspoon, we really called a lot of attention to ourselves, which was really not the point. Farrell, I did stand-up at a wedding during the moment when the priest or whoever says, does anyone object to this union? I said, I do, and then I said, I love you, Carol. The groom's like, this is Barbara. I'm like, oh, sorry, my bad. Have you ever delivered an embarrassing speech at a wedding or other occasion? Witherspoon, I have one and it haunts me. This friend of mine, who I didn't really know that well, a very proper actress, asked me to present her an award, but I had never been to this award ceremony, so I thought it was like a roast. Farrell, but that was not the tone? Witherspoon, no, the tone was British, classy. And I was like, remember the time we got laser hair removal? I'm still embarrassed about it. Will, you recently stepped out dressed as your character Buddy from Elf. Why? Farrell, that just had to happen. He just went to a hockey game, smoked cigarettes, and drank beer. Some people were not too happy, though. They thought, please be true to the character. Witherspoon, do you have all your character's wardrobes at your house? Farrell, in my warehouse on Catalina Island. Witherspoon, but you have an elf costume. Farrell, I don't. Witherspoon, well, where did you get your Buddy costume? Amazon? Farrell, I did. People were commenting like, I love that he's just in a cheap Buddy costume from Amazon, which is true. Their naughty SNL sketch. Witherspoon kept her mermaid costume from the 2001 episode for a while, which was the first time she worked with Farrell. Rom-com hijinks. Farrell recalls laughing so hard at some of the scenes in their new comedy, which co-stars Witherspoon as a woman who becomes his rival when a venue double books two weddings. You've been listening to Double Talk, Their Funny Friendship, from People. Light therapy. You've seen those LED face masks on social media and may be wondering, do they work? The answer is more than a simple yes. In fact, experts are just beginning to understand how this energy and the sun's rays profoundly impact skin. By Brian Underwood, from Women's Health Magazine. What's the first thing you think of when you hear the word light? It's likely something with a positive association, like the phrase see the light, for example, or the proverbial light bulb that appears above a cartoon character's head when a brilliant idea strikes. Maybe it's the brightness of a warm summer day. The point is that we generally consider light to be good, safe, even comforting. Yet when it comes to our skin, things are a bit more, maybe a lot more, complicated. It's well established that many of the cells within our dermis and epidermis, the fibroblasts that produce firming collagen, the melanocytes that churn out protective pigment, are responsive to myriad wavelengths of light. In some cases, it's a response we want. Dermatologists have been using light therapeutically for years, for medical and aesthetic purposes. At other times, say in the development of a painful sunburn or skin cancers, light can have a decidedly negative effect. For some time, the how of all of this was a bit murky. But over the past decade or so, scientists began to understand more about this fascinating cascade. One of the most interesting discoveries is that opsins, a class of light-sensitive proteins found in the rods and cones of our eyes that play a key role in our vision, are also present in skin. It's now believed that these opsins, activated by light, communicate directly with certain skin cells, triggering them to do what they do, says dermatologist Ava Shamban, MD, a former assistant clinical professor of dermatology at the UCLA David Geffen School of Medicine and founder of Los Angeles-based practice Ava MD. Take keratinocytes, which make up about 90% of the cells in our epidermis and are responsible for wound healing in skin. They're home to five different types of opsins, according to one study review, and researchers believe that certain wavelengths of light may activate these opsins, which tells those keratinocytes when to kick the DNA repair and cell division process into high gear. Another possible purpose? It appears that opsins signal melanocytes to make more melanin in response to UV exposure, says Dr. Shamban. As we learn more about how light in all its wavelengths contributes to many of skin's most basic tasks, the dichotomy between its positive and negative effects on our outer layer becomes even more interesting and confusing. But while science continues to play catch-up on the how and why, there are some basic truths that can help guide you to a firmer, glowier, healthier complexion. When it comes to those, we're here to shed some, you know. All the light you can see or not. Let's pivot to a fun physics lesson. Light exists on an electromagnetic spectrum of wavelengths that are measured in nanometers. Those between 200 and 400 nanometers constitute the invisible spectrum, which includes the ultraviolet radiation from the sun. Wavelengths between roughly 400 and 800 nanometers form the visible light spectrum, says Anar Mikhailov, MD, a dermatologist at Rochester Regional Health. Visible light, what's emitted by a fluorescent light bulb or one of those trendy LED face masks you may be seeing all over social media, can be important for some people, and we'll get to who in a minute. But UV radiation is relevant to everyone because we know that cumulatively it can do a lot of damage in terms of visible skin aging and the development of skin cancers, says Dr. Mikolov. There are three forms of UV light generated by the sun: UVA, UVB, and UVC. UVC is rarely discussed because it never makes its way to us. Just 5% of the UV light striking the Earth's surface is UVB. The other 95% is UVA. And while you're likely familiar with the not-so-nice ways that UV exposure can assault skin, damaging collagen, causing skin discoloration, and contributing to skin cancer, dermatologists also use it in a controlled way to treat skin conditions such as psoriasis, eczema, and vitiligo. This treatment method is known as phototherapy, and experts don't fully understand how it works. The primary mechanism of UV therapy seems to be its anti-inflammatory effects, says Sherry Lipner, MD, an associate professor of clinical dermatology at the New York Presbyterian Hospital, Weill Cornell Medical Center. It's a paradox. How can something so dangerous to skin also be beneficial? But one that's easily explained. UV therapy is dose dependent, says Dr. Lipner. We can control the amount of energy emitted and the time spent, so it's very exact, she says. Generally, a patient is in there for seconds to minutes, not hours. That's quite different from spending the day at the beach or a few minutes in a tanning bed, where you'd be exposed to an imprecise range of invisible light for a longer period. It's also worth noting that, with the rise of alternative treatments, like prescription medications, such as biologics, phototherapy using UV is becoming less common. Our experts stress that it still comes with some risk for skin cancer. For this reason, the American Academy of Dermatology continues to recommend that you avoid tanning beds, which bears repeating given the alarming rise in usage among Gen Z, and slather on a broad-spectrum sunscreen, meaning it contains ingredients that shield skin from the entire range of invisible light, with an SPF of at least 30 daily. Seeing red and blue and green. On the other end of the spectrum is visible light, and the recent proliferation of LED masks, wands, and other at-home devices means you're likely more familiar with these wavelengths than you may realize, even if it's only because you've seen the high-tech tools on the gram. The most popular forms are red light and blue light, and both are used by dermatologists in phototherapy to treat conditions such as acne. Blue light penetrates about a millimeter into skin, where it's absorbed by molecules called porphyrins that are present in acne-causing bacteria, says Dr. Shamban. Once inside those porphyrins, the light basically causing the bacteria to explode, reducing their numbers drastically. Cool visual, right? Red light, on the other hand, penetrates even deeper, says Dr. Shamban, going 2 to 3 millimeters into the dermis. Red light is absorbed by porphyrins in the mitochondria of skin cells, stimulating energy production in the fibroblasts to churn out more collagen, she explains. So it may seem like a no-brainer to invest in a trendy at-home red light therapy device, some of which cost upwards of $1,000. But our experts want you to take a breath before you part with that money. That's because the masks and wands you can buy for home use are different from the devices you'd encounter in dermatologist's office. The wavelength itself may be similar, but the output, the power, the intensity is not equivalent, says New York City-based dermatologist David Kim, MD, founder of Lightsaver, a popular line of mineral sunscreens. Even a brand like Omnilux, which sells masks for home use, creates separate devices for medical offices. Research shows that in-office red light therapy can improve the tone and texture of the skin. But the American Academy of Dermatology cautions that it's difficult to know how effective at-home devices are. Bottom line, we need more research. That said, our experts are optimistic about the use of at-home red light therapy as an adjunct treatment to in-office procedures. And Dr. Mikhailov often encourages his hair loss patients to use low-level light therapy, which research suggests may shift follicles located in the dermis into the anagen or growth phase. When you compare the results of people who use these devices to those who don't, there is a difference, and one that's been replicated in several studies, he says. For a list of devices tested and recommended by the Women's Health editorial team, see Bright Ideas below. And that brings us back to our original question. How can something be both good and bad for our skin? The answer is as timeless as a gorgeous sunset. Everything in moderation. Don't fear a beautiful day at the beach. Just protect yourself accordingly. Do your homework if you want to invest in a fancy LED light mask, but don't expect miracles, and don't ditch your acne prescription or topical retinoid cream. Sure, a lot of questions remain unanswered, but scientists are getting closer to figuring out how it all works. And even though the connection between light and skin may still be a little blurry, it's well established. They go together like love and marriage, says Dr. Shamban. That's enough of a light bulb for me. Bright Ideas. Peruse Amazon or your local Sephora, and it's very likely, almost guaranteed, that you'll come across one of the dozens of at-home light devices now available for purchase. Many are making a splash on social, the SolaWave one, for example, and even brands that once focused on technology to address muscle recovery and overall wellness, like Therabody, have gotten in on the game. They can be pricey. Even basic models can run several hundred dollars. And while medical devices are monitored and approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for safety, Dr. Shamban points out that individual devices sold for home use are not evaluated by the FDA for efficacy. If you're in the market for one, you'll want to consider a few things. First, different lights are used for different skin issues, with blue targeting acne and red targeting early signs of aging. So the type of light matters. Next, choose a product that you're apt to use consistently, because it takes time to see results. If you can dedicate 10 to 20 uninterrupted minutes a day to light therapy, go with a mask or hair growing cap. Most are hands-free, so you can watch TV or scroll your phone. If you're the antsy type or are focused on specific areas of the face or scalp, a wand or comb might be best. Helmet Head, a recipient of 2024 Women's Health Beauty Award, this device won our hearts for several reasons. First, it's one of the few we've seen that distributes light over the entire scalp. Two, it features built-in speakers, so you can listen to music or a podcast during your sesh. Just take it off delicately. It tangled in the hair of some of our testers. Current Body Skin LED Health Hair Growth Helmet, $859 from currentbody.com. FaceTime. Our tester used this mask, which has 648 medical-grade lights, red and blue wavelengths, and vibrational technology to massage around your eyes and head for several weeks, and noticed a substantial difference in the smoothness and brightness of his complexion. It's an investment, but a worthy one. The tester is still using it to this day. Therabody, Theraface Mask, $599, Nordstrom.com. Smooth Move. It's billed as the first smart laser hair removal device, meaning it connects to an app on your phone to tailor the treatment by assessing your skin tone and hair color and adjusting the energy accordingly. Easy to use and pain-free, a little zip here and there, this tool was chosen as the best at-home hair removal laser. From Bronze Skin, Expert $500, iExpert $500, Amazon.com. Magic Wand. Targeting specific areas of the face, crow's feet, nasolabial folds, patches of breakouts, is easy with this ingenious handheld, which combines red and blue lights with radio frequency energy and electrical muscle stimulation for lifting and firming results that would be tough to find using other devices. Althea Skin Cara Multimodal Tool, $350 at alt-skin.com. You've been listening to Light Therapy from Women's Health Magazine. Liza, a truly terrific, absolutely true story. In theaters. Documentary. Here's Liza Minnelli, ladies and gentlemen, frail but still full of spark as she recalls showbiz triumphs and personal troubles, especially from her 70s heyday when she won Best Actress for Cabaret. Story has an agenda, though, focusing on Minnelli's mentors, singer Charles Aznavour, designer Halston, actress Kay Thompson. It distances her, poignantly, yet pointedly, from mother Judy Garland. The fabled Garland probably isn't exercised so easily. She's the Babadook with jazz hands. But Liza, sizzler and survivor, rightfully gets the last word. In limited release, not rated. A star like no other. Funny, sexy, touchingly vulnerable, Liza Minnelli at her best. The Sterile Cuckoo, 1969. She earned her first Best Actress nod as Pookie, yes, Pookie, an eccentric loner who pins her romantic dreams on a conventional boy, Wendell Burton. The film is dated, but she remains enchanting. On Apple TV. Cabaret, 1972. This landmark movie musical won Minnelli the Best Actress Oscar. Singing with a brassy, desperate vitality, she's Sally Bowles, a cheerfully decadent performer at a seedy nightclub in Weimar, Berlin. On Prime Video. Arrested Development, 2003 to 2013. In a recurring guest role across 21 episodes of the cult sitcom, she shows tremendous comic zest and expert timing as Lucille Ostero, a wealthy widow suffering from vertigo, on Netflix. This has been Liza, a true truly terrific, absolutely true story, a documentary from People Magazine. Well, that's a wrap on today's Women's Hour. Thanks for joining us. My name is Kelly Pyle, and I am your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. I hope you enjoyed the interesting stories today in our program. Please make plans to join us again next week for another interesting and entertaining collection of Women's Magazine articles. And don't forget, you can take Sun Sounds with you. You can stream as well as access shows on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. I hope you have a great day today, and be sure to stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.